couldn't help but think while you're saying that, that who knows more about Adam than Adam? Kind of hard to talk about someone that's your same name, probably. I'd like to read to you some poetry. I guess that's the proper thing to call it. It's Words of a Song. It's number 80 in a red book. There's room in the kingdom of God, my brother, for the small things that you can do. Just a small kindly deed that may cure another is the work that God has planned for you. Just a cup of cold water in his name given may the hope in some heart renew. Do not wait to be told nor by sorrow driven to the work God has planned for you. There's a place in the service of God for workers who are loyal to him and true. Can't you say to him now, I will leave the shirkers, and the work thou hast planned, I'll do. I wanted to talk about work, and that song popped in my mind right away, and I thought it'd be good to use the words of it. I have some thoughts I'd like to bring you about things that we're supposed to do, and it's more about the work that we do in the church and the work that we do for the Lord. And I'm not trying to belittle faith, because we know how important faith is. We have many people that say that you can be saved by faith alone, but we know that you need to be saved by faith and works, because we show our faith by our works. And so we have to be able to do the work of the Lord. I kind of titled it, Why Stand Ye Idle? Why stand ye here all the day idle? About the 11th hour, he went out. This is Matthew 20 and 6. About the 11th hour, he went out and found them still others standing around. He asked him, Why have you been standing here all day, doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, You also go and work in my vineyard. So he's putting them work there. He's looking for people that were working, and it tells about that in the different times that we can go to work for the Lord. Some go to work younger, and some toward the middle of their life, some toward the end of their life. And the reward, as we went ahead and read that, would be that was the same for one as it was for the other. Said that no one hired him, Matthew 20 and 7, but this was an excuse that they had, and this excuse could be very well go today in the hiring business, because we know a lot of people are getting out of work, and the reason that they're not working is that they're not hired. But I'm talking about spiritual work and work in the church. There's always work there, whether you've got a job, a secular job or not. Some people are looking and they say, well, if I could do a big work, something really great, something that would stand out, well, I'd be glad to do it. But we don't have to do a big work, but we can also, somebody has to do little things. And the little things are probably easier for us to do, and it goes just as far. And when we talk about that, we can think about the things that we have to do around here. We think about mowing the grass. It's a wonderful work. It makes a place look so nice, makes it look nice to people in the neighborhood, people in the world, and makes us feel good about our building and things. And if we just let it grow up and look wild, why, we'd all be ashamed of it. But somebody has to do it, and it's kind of a lowly job. It's not like getting up here and being a good speaker and speaking on Sunday morning and having people pat you on the back and say you did a good job. But it's also a good job when somebody gets out here and spends 4 to 6 hours mowing, takes the time out of other things that they could do, and nobody's out here watching you. Nobody sees you doing it, but it's God knows what you're doing. We know what you're doing. We see the names that are on the board who does it, and we really appreciate it. And that's some of the small things that we can do. Even though it's a big thing, it in the time that it takes. Luke 16 and 10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest in very little will also be dishonest with much. Well, this is talking about more about the things we do where honesty, that it goes a long ways there from the mowing and stuff like that. But we don't want to just talk about the mowing, but people that spend several hours a month cleaning the building, and the building looks good all the time, and it could really look terrible if we just let it go and didn't worry about keeping it clean. The one thing that brought this to my mind was not those things, because we do them all the time, and we do them each year. They have to be done, and it just continues on. But also our vacation Bible school. I was only out here one day, but I got to see these women working. And there's a lot of things to do, and they work, and they get all of it done. And not everyone does it. Maybe the ones that don't do it may do other things that are just as big or that show up just as much, but I don't get to see it, and I got to see this. And they were here really working and helping the children out, so that the children perhaps will be workers someday for the Lord. And we hope so. Our responsibilities that we have in doing things, we're not expected to do anything that we can't do. Just like here, I used to lead singing years ago, but I never was any good at it. And that's one reason I said when we came here that we have so many good song leaders that there isn't any use in you having to put up with me. So the elders don't expect me to lead songs. If I don't want to and I'm not good at it, they don't expect me to do it. But there are other things that I can do. And I think that we are expected to do that. Now, they don't come to you and tell you you have to do it. But we know that these things have to be done, and we can see ourselves. We're all intelligent beings. We can see what needs to be done, and we can do it just because we know it needs to be done, and to help out the officers in the church. I'd like to read to you from Matthew, the 25th chapter, 14th verse through the 30th verse. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. God is trusting his property to us. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man had received 5 talents, went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also one with 2 talents and gained 2 more. Each one of them doubled what they had. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Well, I guess, you know, they're back when people were afraid of banks, why they hid their money like that. But this was just normal times, and talking about normal times, that this man should have put this money to use. But I don't know if you heard about it this week or not, but on the news there was a woman that's in a foreign country, and she had hid her money, her life savings, and nobody knows why she would have that much life savings or not, but said she had $1 million, she hid it in a mattress. And she bought her mother a new mattress to sleep on and threw the old one away. Then woke up in the night and realized, hey, that money was still in that mattress. Now, they don't know how she got $1 million. But she went and looked through all the dumps and had other people looking through the dumps. And this was over in a foreign country, I forget, Israel or somewhere over in there. And it said that they dumped something like 2,500 tons of waste a day over there. And she was out there looking through all that. And they even put extra guards around the dumps. And she went through 3 different ones that it might have been in, I guess. And I've never heard any more about it, whether they found it or not. But It's kind of dangerous to hide your money in a mattress and then forget that it's there. And you could do that in the backyard, too. After a long time, the master of these servants returned, settled accounts with him. The man who had received 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." Then the man who received 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I know that you're a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then you should not have put my money. Well, then you should have put my money in deposit with the bankers, so that when I return, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even when even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside in the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So, makes us think we better try, haven't we? If we're going to go according to the story that we're given, so that we're supposed to learn from, and learn how we're supposed to do things. And some that are in the church may use excuses for not doing things and say, "Well, I've lost interest." Well, are you interested in your own soul, in the souls of others? Are you interested in the church, in the Lord's work? If you're interested in these, how can you say you've lost interest? And surely you're interested in some of those. And then others say that the Lord can't use me in his work, that there's nothing I can do that would amount to anything that the Lord would want. And I'd like to read to you from Mark 12, 41 through 44, about the lesson of the 2 mites, the woman and the 2 mites. This is one of the small things that's done, and it's recognized by Jesus as a great thing. And that could be us. "Jesus sat down on the opposite place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in 2 copper coins worth a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him," he didn't just notice this, he called his disciples to him to bring this to their attention. "Jesus said, 'I'll tell you the truth. This poor widow has put in more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty. Put in everything, all she has to live on.'" So that was everything that she had, she put in there. And we could reason and say, what would it do to put in 2 coins that aren't even worth the price of a penny? And we could use that for an excuse for not giving. We could use it for an excuse of not doing other things. Why should I do this little thing? Because it won't amount to anything. Somebody else can come out and do it. Somebody can be here and they can do it while they're here doing something else. We read about David and when he used his sling to kill Goliath. Goliath was a giant of a man. David was just a little boy. And I don't know exactly what his size was, but it said that Goliath was a giant of a man. And I think of someone probably about 8 foot tall. And he had armor. He had swords and everything. And David, no one would go up against him. They were all afraid of him. And he yelled out at them, and they were scared even of his voice. And so David said he would go. And what did he use? He used a sling. I'd like to read from 1 Samuel 17, 38 through 50. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. David didn't have any armor. He was just a young boy. Put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "This is one of those things, you're in trouble if you do, and you're in trouble if you don't." It's just like, I had a guy one time told me he was going to whip me. And I said, "Well, what have you gained? If we have a fight, and you whip me, so you whipped an old man. And if we have a fight and I whip you, it really looks bad." So there was no way for this giant to win, hardly. But he looked David over, and he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "I am a dog that you come to me with sticks." And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. And there wasn't any fear at all, apparently. The guy moving up to him, getting closer to him, and David just runs up and gets involved. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. So that, just a little sling and a stone. I don't know if some of the young ones probably don't know what a sling is. Maybe some of the older ones don't. But it'd be 2 leather thongs, probably about this long. And you put them over your fingers, and you have a pouch like on the back of it, and you put your rock in there, your stone, and then you whirl it around, and then you pull back on it, and the stone goes out, and it moves pretty good speed. And but this is what he killed him with, and a giant of a man, and he brought him down. He crashed to the ground. Another thing about using something small, it was God used a man that was slow of speech to lead the Israelites in Exodus 4 and 10. Moses said to the Lord, "O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." Well, that's a good excuse I could use for not being up here tonight, is that I'm slow of speech. I'm not good at getting a lesson together, as a lot of people are. But when if the elders ask us to, well, it seems to me like that we need to do it without questioning. And Christ used a donkey in his service, and a donkey was a pretty lowly animal. Matthew 21, 1 through 3, as they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethphage on Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there and her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, tell him that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." So he used the donkey when he was making his entrance into Jerusalem. And if it had been a king, well, he would have probably had either a carriage with several horses on the front of it, or he would have ridden a horse into there that would have been probably a great white stallion or something, the best one that he could find to make show out of it. But the Lord wasn't worried about show. He rode a lowly donkey in. He used a boy's lunch to feed the multitudes. John 6 and 9. "Here's a boy with five small barley loaves and two small fishes. How far will they go among so many?" Why mess with these? They won't go very far among so many people. But they fed 12,000 and they had left over. Reasons that we should work and do what we can to do the Lord's work is to show the faith by our works, James 2 and 18. But someone will say, "You have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by what I do." This probably doesn't sound from most of the scriptures I'm reading, don't sound familiar to you because it came out of the NIV, and it seems like I can read the words better out of it than I can out of the King James. And you'd be justified by works. James 2 and 24. "You see that a person is justified by what he does and not by faith alone." And then we have to think about the night comes when no man can work. We know that's a time that we won't be here any longer. And it will be a time that we can't work for the Lord any longer. But it'll be a happier time for us. John 9 and 4. "As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no man can work." We're going to be judged according to what we do. Revelations 20 and 12. "And I saw the dead and great and small standing before the throne. The books were open, and another book was open, which was the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books." So we're going to be judged according to what we've done. And the only time that we got to do it is when we're here. Only time we got to do it is when we're right here and we've got the work to do. We know what needs to be done, and we can work at it and do it. And even though we don't think that we're capable of doing something and that we're slow in doing what we do, we can just keep plodding along. Because of the people that, if you work with other people, you can see people that work slower and there's people that work faster, but the ones that work slower keep going and get the job done too. That's the reason they still got a job. And that would be a reason that the Lord wants us, is if we work at it and do his will. Jesus died on that cross for us so that we could have eternal life. Jesus did many great things for us when he was here. And he preached sermons so we could know what we're supposed to do. And then he gave his life. We're not expected to give our life in that way. We're supposed to give our life by working for him and being a child of God. If we can help you tonight, we offer an invitation to you as we stand to sing invitations.